From ProCare Global Initiative in Germany, I am Kristen Brueggemann with Hope Horizon. Today, twin sisters Jennifer and Janet, age 14, narrate their experiences on how they were disrupted by the Islamic militant group in northern Nigeria. Boko Haram, they called themselves, spread the ideology that the right form of Islam is what they want to see practiced in the country. Currently, in hideouts in northern Nigeria, the group imposes fear and terror acts targeting strategic places of public interest and lives. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the insurgency has displaced nearly 2,400,000 people, including nearly 1.5 million children. The group continues to attack civilians in Nigeria, Cameroon, and Chad by grave violations of human rights, widespread sexual and gender-based violence, forced recruitment, and suicide bombings. In this episode, Jennifer and Janet will allow us to have a peep on the hideous activities perpetuated in their community by the group and what life had for them thereafter. Emma Harrington has the rest of the story.
Please be aware that the following story contains memories of violence and war. These stories were taken from an interview in 2018 and translated from Hausa to English. We couldn't have imagined it would happen like it did. My family had left Maiduguri to Kanduga, and then to our village. When we arrived, we kept hearing announcements that Boko Haram would come to our village in the coming days. They would send notices that they were coming, and people would pass along the information. They said they would come Sunday. None of us went to church that day. Boys stood outside while girls climbed the mountain to find a place to pray, staying away from their churches for fear of losing their lives. We kept looking out, thinking, they will come anytime soon. It was noon, and there was no sign of them. It's late afternoon. They will not come, people said. They arrive in the mornings or the evenings. It turns out the terrorist group couldn't cross over the river between our village and the next. It was high season of the year, and the river overflowed its bank, washing away the bridge they had built the night before. We continued to remain alert the entire time. The next day, they were able to cross over as the waters settled down. A kid from the neighboring village escaped to run and tell us. The news was not received well. Our village responded saying, "It's a lie. We were told the same yesterday, but they did not come." Early in the morning, my mother was preparing breakfast when she rushed into our room and woke us saying, "Wake up, they're here." My father told us he would go quickly and collect a gun from the gunsmith. After he left, we heard gunshots all around. I wasn't sure what to do, so I took some clothing from my father and prepared to leave our home. We hurried outside to flee, but my mother refused to leave as she didn't see them coming. She didn't seem to believe they were approaching. My father returned, making his way into the house. I remember my mother warning him to stay outside. He insisted on taking something he forgot and went into the house. We ran to the mountains, carrying my younger brother, leaving our father behind. We heard gunshots from 6 in the morning until 6 in the evening. When the shooting stopped, we went down the mountain to return home, but realized my younger brother had gone missing. My mother sat down and cried, but thankfully we saw him shortly afterward. But it wasn't over. We couldn't find our father. We were told to wait, as many people were just returning from the mountains. We convinced our mother to move on to a safer town. However, the moment we started heading out, we saw planes throwing down grenades. We didn't know if this plane belonged to the military or the terrorists. All we knew was that grenades were being thrown down at people and on rooftops in the settlement. "Run, hurry back to the house," said my mother. As we began discussing whether to stay or leave, a grenade was thrown at us and mother pushed us into the flower garden. The grenade exploded. We were all safe. She told us to hide behind the flowers and stay close to the wall. We slowly made our way back to our room. In our room, we stood with our backs to the wall and walked pressed against it, looking for safety. It's hard to remember anything in that moment because there was so much confusion and chaos. There was just one airplane. After it passed us, we would run, and when it came back towards us, we would lean against the walls, trying to hide. This way, we slowly made our way up the mountain. We came down around 8 in the evening and continued discussing whether to stay or leave. At the end, we decided to leave regardless of our mother's opposition. "Your older brother and father aren't here, although I can see that leaving is still better for you," she said. It was time to leave, so she took our younger brother and placed him on a bike to be transported to the village of Lhasa, while the rest of us walked. We reached Lhasa at 11 in the evening. The following day, we heard that our father had been killed and was already buried. Our mother had known about it, but couldn't figure out the right way to tell us. We cried hard until we were tired and couldn't cry anymore. At the same time, our older brother was in high school at Uba, but he left to join us at Lhasa. He couldn't pay his school fees anymore. The very day he left to come to us, the terrorist group Boko Haram went to his school. Most of the students escaped. He was told later, "Timothy, as you left, they came to attack us in the school, and most of us escaped through the forest." After about 7 months, we planned to return to our village. Our mother advised that we stay longer and gather some money to live a little better, buy a few more clothes maybe. But then, Boko Haram sent notice of their coming arrival to Lhasa. We called our uncle for some money and returned home before the attack. Our village had a small time of peace until the Boko Haram announced again that they were coming. We told mother that we would not stay here anymore. She called our uncle for some finances. He sent some money for our departure. We walked all the way on foot from Dile to Jibok, which took well over 20 hours. They got transportation to Yola, another state. Our uncle continued to fund our education, and our aunt offered for us to stay with her. She lives far away in the peaceful south. The idea was good, and my uncle sent some money for transportation. But when we were getting close, we were informed that the road was not good, and the bus could not continue. So we returned and stayed in Yola. At that time, my uncle had paid for our transportation and had no money left for school fees. My younger siblings could, however, go to school, as it cost less for them. We were unable to find help, even from our distant relatives. All we did was wait for a breakthrough, until a pastor called my mother with an offer to bring some children to the state of Jos. We drove there the next day. Life continues to present different challenges here in Jos. We need toothpaste and dresses. Some of us at the camp only have one dress, and when we wash it, we have to wait naked until it dries. Both myself and my sister can't see well, and others have to spell for us what the teacher writes on the board. We live with our youngest sibling, among many others, in a camp with basic food. We also want to attend high school. It was once a peaceful time, with Dad providing for the family. But because he has been killed by the Boko Haram, we have moved away from our village, and we're living away from our family. We have to hope and trust for the best for the future. Jennifer and Janet are currently being provided for by ProCare Global. They live in a camp with around 80 other children who have been rescued from the war zone. ProCare depends on sponsorship to continue in provision for these children and needs monetary donations to continue to provide food, clothing, education, and basic necessities. Please visit procare-global.org for support opportunities.